All right, let's get right to Mookie Betts. Your initial reaction when you heard the move, what were you thinking?
As we talked about last week, look, I get it why the Red Sox are doing it. We talked back in 2017, 2018 about how the credit card bill was going to come due.
Yeah.
You know, for the David Price signing and for the strip mining of the farm system and Chris Sale signing, which we talked last spring, it wasn't a smart deal at the time. Nathan Eovaldi, and so they got boxed in with some of the contracts that they had, and then when Mookie wasn't interested in that $300 million offer they gave him and signaled that he was intent on going into free agency, then they were faced with a really difficult choice. They finished 19 games behind the Yankees last year in the American League East, and then the Yankees went and signed Gerrit Cole, and then the Red Sox lost one of the best managers in baseball in Alex Cora.
Yeah.
Personally, I feel like it was the right decision. I know they're taking a ton of abuse over it. A lot of complaining from Red Sox fans. I can tell you that, you know, in talking with evaluators with other teams who know the prospects and know potential trade value for a one-year guy before they hit the market, folks with other teams are feeling like the Red Sox made a good trade.
Yeah, Buster, I'm seeing a lot of the websites that I've been looking at today, like B-minus grades and stuff like that. I mean, how should Sox Nation feel about Alex Verdugo and whatever, Gratterall?
Well, Gratterall is, without a doubt, he's a big arm. You know, Baseball America sent out a thing today that among all minor leaguers, he had the best average fastball. That said, the Minnesota Twins, Derek Falvey runs their baseball ops. He's a really, really smart guy. And what executive said to me today is, look, if Derek Falvey's trading guys for 101, 102, then there's a question. Alex Verdugo has been one of the Dodgers' better prospects, but if you look at Andrew Friedman's history, he doesn't trade his very best guys. He kept Cody Bellinger. He kept Corey Seager. He kept Walker Buehler. And he decided he was willing to trade Alex Verdugo because he's not a perfect player. He's not, although he's played center field in the past, I've heard, you know, he's not necessarily a great center fielder. He is someone who's a good hitter. We'll see how he develops. But as one person pointed out to me today, that to shed that much money on David Price's contract, we shouldn't understate how big of a deal that was to get out from underneath that kind of money.
Buster, the thing I've been wondering all day was, if they're going to pay $48 million and for nothing, why didn't the Red Sox try to take a bad contract from the Dodgers and try to take A.J. Pollock? They need a right-handed hitting outfielder now. They need another outfielder. And Pollock's owed almost the same money as Price, you know, as what they're paying the difference with Price. Why didn't the Dodgers just throw in Pollock here? Maybe that helps the Sox.
The way I look at it is, I mentioned the gap that they had with the Yankees last year and how far behind they were. I think the Red Sox are close to being in the same place that the Yankees were in 2016 when they traded Aroldis Chapman, they traded Andrew Miller, and they bolstered the farm system and for a quick reset and to come back. Getting A.J. Pollock doesn't help that. And by the way, you know, Pollock had a really bad year last year. There's no guarantee that he's going to bounce back in his early 30s. And so I don't know what the attraction would be. I'd rather, you know, have Alex Verdugo. You got 5 years of control on a young player who's considered to be a guy who's going to hit. If I were the Red Sox, I would just continue to take more steps toward retooling, resetting, see if you flip Jackie Bradley Jr. for some value. I think they certainly have guys in their bullpen who are going to have some value during the course of the year. Maybe Mitch Moreland builds some value. But set yourself up with the idea that, you know what, we have a better chance to compete for the division in 22 and 23 rather than in 2020.
Buster Olney of ESPN with us here on the Huddle, 101.3 The Game, 1013thegame.com. Look, I wanted both of them. I wanted Verdugo and Pollock. But, you know, the one knock on Verdugo we've heard about is, one, is his back. Now, we missed the last 50 games of the year last year and the playoffs, and he's reportedly not even doing baseball activity right now still because of his back, but also his attitude. I mean, what do we know about this guy as far as character?
That there are questions within the industry about it. Last year when I asked some Dodger folks about it, they said they really felt like that it was a case of a young player who is just kind of growing into his personality. But there's no doubt that that's attached to him.
With Mookie Betts, his numbers have to go down, Buster, because he's not going to have as many home runs because it's a pitcher's ballpark in L.A. He's not going to have as many RBIs with the pitcher batting at number 9 and a weak hitter at number 8. So are Dodger fans going to be okay with that?
I think they'll be fine. Look, he's going to be right in the middle of this incredible lineup. You know, you figure he's going to hit leadoff. Max Muncy will hit 2. Justin Turner's going to hit 3. Cody Bellinger's going to hit 4. And just like the Red Sox team in 2018, that should all give him a chance to thrive. And I think he'll absolutely love it playing out there. You know, there were times, as we saw with Nomar, as we saw with Dustin Pedroia, as you see a lot of players in Boston and New York, that the attention can kind of bother him. In L.A., I think he's just going to be able to go and play. And you know, certainly he's going to have a huge impact on defense. Last year, Cody Bellinger and Mookie Betts finished in the top 5, both of them, among outfielders in defensive runs saved. You know, Bellinger, I would assume, is going to be the guy who's going to move to center field. Mookie will stay in right field. That'll be a lot of fun to watch, I think, if you're a baseball fan. Maybe not if you're a Red Sox fan, but if you're a baseball fan, absolutely.
Buster, you know, for the last couple of years, we've been hearing arbitration, and, oh, Mookie's just not going to be happy when it comes down to crunch time with this long-term deal. I mean, who's to blame in the Red Sox organization for the absurd concept that they're just letting this generational talent walk away in his prime?
Yeah, I think the mistakes were made when Mookie was in year 3 or in year 4. I think that by the time we got to the last year, when they, in the last offseason of 2018-2019, when they went to him with the offer, you know, reportedly for $300 million, by then he was so close to free agency, and I think there was probably a lot of encouragement to get him to free agency. And look, I've said this to you guys before, I'll say it again. Mookie reminds me so much of his new teammate, Clayton Kershaw, and I don't think either one of those guys cares about money, you know, for the sake of money. In other words, you don't see Mookie out there with 25 cars, right, 50 houses. That's not him. Clayton Kershaw went with my colleague Jessica Mendoza on a relief effort to Dominican Republic, and he sat like in the middle seat in row 22 because he said to Jessica he didn't feel right about buying a first class seat. That's their personality. But I think they also, Clayton understands his importance within the union to push the upper limits, the way Garrett Cole did this offseason. And Mookie, I think, was in that position moving forward, understood that. And if money's not that important to you, it's easier to do that than to think, look, I'm going to grab my chunk of cash. So I do think that he's serving the greater good within his own union. I know average fans will roll their eyes and say, boy, what a guy. Within the union, I think they appreciate it because he's going to pull up their earning power, some of his colleagues.
Yeah, but just one thing on that, though, Buster. What happens if Mookie was from Pittsburgh and wanted to play for the Pirates or wanted to play for Tampa or his wife was from there? Then what?
Then you can't get you're not going to get your market value. And we've seen that play out with Francisco Lindor with the Indians. Look, he's a great player. Everyone recognizes Lindor's one of the 5 best players in baseball. He's a shortstop. The Indians love him. You can't be a better person. And he's just not going to fit in that marketplace. And every time we have this situation pop up, people say, you know, let's have a salary cap, let's make it a level playing field. It's never going to be a level playing field. Teams like the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers will always have a big advantage over those other teams. You know, this is just a case where I think the Red Sox feel like that they want to make sure they get some value in return for Mookie before he walks out the door and becomes a free agent.
Buster, how about the manager search right now for the Red Sox? We know they're interviewing candidates, but they still don't have a hire. Spring training starts in 6 days. Are we going to get something done soon?
Yeah, and I wish I could give you some special insight on that. I would reiterate this to you guys that, again, talking with sources, what I'm hearing is that Major League Baseball and investigating the 2018 Red Sox, they've got some. They're working off some very specific piece of information in building a case that the Red Sox were engaged in sign stealing. I can't tell you if it was as egregious as the Astros, if it wasn't quite as egregious, but they're working on something specific.
Wow.
Buster, what about Chaim Bloom? I mean, how do you think he's done so far in this? But, I mean, the poor guy here, your first job is to get rid of Mookie Betts and get what you can for him. But Boston media, of course, immediately just making the assumption that now we're turning into the Tampa Bay Rays and we're going to slash all payroll and still be winners. I mean, what do you think of that?
Yeah, well, I remember talking to you guys back in September about how, you know, I was having private conversations with high-ranking officials that the Red Sox probably would have loved to have talked to about coming on board, and the feedback that I got was, what a great job. You get to go over, lead the Red Sox, make a really unpopular decision in trading their best and most popular guy in Mookie Betts. You have to do some other payroll things. You have to rebuild the farm system, and then in the back of your mind, you're wondering if the ownership is going to pull the rug out from underneath you the way they did with Ben Cherington, who focused on the farm system, and they did with Dave Dombrowski, who spent big.
Yeah.
And so I agree. I you know, and Chaim Bloom, you know, he, in taking the Red Sox job, it was a promotion for him. It was a great opportunity. He's incredibly respected within the industry. And I can tell you this, too. People who have said, well, that was just a bad deal for the Red Sox, I promise you, as thorough as Chaim Bloom learned to be when he was with the Tampa Bay Rays, they, I'm sure, connected with every team, and nobody else was stepping up and making a better offer than what they wound up on a deal that they, what they wound up doing with the Dodgers.
Well, Buster, I said the Red Sox need another outfielder, and they do, and they need another right-handed hitting outfielder. They just happen to have Rusdy Castillo stashed in AAA, and now they have the money to bring him up. Geez. Are we ever going to see this guy again?
I would be shocked.
Wow.
As we've talked about in the past, he has more value to the organization down the minor leagues, not counting against their salary cap situation. No, I would be surprised if that happens, because they're working so diligently trying to cut their payroll, and you're immediately, the idea of promoting Castillo adds payroll. I don't see it, especially when it's apparent that, you know, their perspective is, look, we are retooling for 2020.
How about we'll get you out of here on this. James Paxton for the Yankees, out 3 to 4 months, we just learned. It looks like he had a cyst removed from his back that's going to put him out until at least May, maybe even June. How big a loss is that?
It is it's an important loss. It's like knocking out one of the, you know, the legs underneath one of the chairs of their rotation. You know, look, getting Gerrit Cole gives them an extraordinary presence at the front of their rotation, and they have good depth with Tanaka and with Luis Severino coming back from his injury. But if they get one more injury or two more injuries, suddenly it's going to look very different. And let's face it, I mean, Paxton toward the end of last year began to show some things. It looked like he was turning a corner. And when you miss this kind of time, it's going to be like he's starting over when he rejoins the team in the middle of the year.